Week 2 college football playoff rankings were released. A lot of questions about it, and here to talk about it with us, CBS college football analyst Rick Neuheisel, our guest on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Rick, how are you?
I am doing great. How are you guys today?
We're doing well. Before we dive into the college stuff, the last time we had you on the show was in anticipation of the first season for you as head coach of the Arizona Hotshots of the AAF. We all know what happened, but it seemed
you guys had a
good team. It seemed like you were having a lot of fun in that role. How bummed were you about what happened?
Crushed. I'm telling you that we had such a blast. We had such a blast, players, coaches alike, and I really believe this in my heart of hearts. We would have won the thing. We were playing well. Johnny Wolford was coming into his own as our quarterback. We had a bunch of great kids on both sides of the ball that were dying to play. We knocked off the Orlando Apollos and Spurrier's team, who claimed the championship because they had the best record. I keep arguing with them. I said, but you would have had to play us again. And you know how that went the first time. So I say we won the championship. But all in good fun. I miss it. It was a great amount of fun to be coaching again.
Yeah, but Spurrier went as far as to get rings made up for his team.
I know. I guarantee he didn't pay for it.
I know him well enough.
He didn't pay for it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, the college football playoff, there's a lot of speculation that has begun. There's been consternation that Alabama might find their way back in. What are some of your initial thoughts about maybe some of the pitfalls ahead or maybe some of the excitement ahead for college football?
Well, I think there are two great stories that are unfolding. The Minnesota story is a fabulous one. P.J. Fleck has done a great job there. We watched him do it at Western Michigan just a few years ago, and I call him the barista of belief. He gets those kids believing, and they start speaking the same language. It's row the boat. It's Sky Yuma. It's feeling elite. It's a wonderful story. But if you watch the waning moments of that game against Penn State, where they run out on the field with the victory bell, that's what you go, there's nothing like this elsewhere in the United States. It's just great fun. The same thing's going on in Baylor, and they get a giant stage this weekend. Just a few years ago, Matt Rhule had a 1-11 team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had to get a 7-year deal before they could lure him away from Temple because they knew that it was going to be a big overhaul to try to clean up what had happened at the end of the Art Briles tenure. And so this thing goes into 1-11. Last year they make it to postseason, playing great at the end. Now they're sitting there 9-0, and here comes Oklahoma. If they beat Oklahoma in front of a home crowd, you're going to see the same scene in Waco that you saw in Minneapolis. So both those teams, I think, still control their own destiny, despite where they sit at 13-8 in the playoff poll. But I think if you're a undefeated team at the end of the day in a Power 5 conference, you're going to be in.
Yep.
You mentioned Alabama. Alabama, you know, is in harm's way, given that they've been to the college football playoff in each of the first 5 years. But there is a way, by virtue of the fact that they were still ahead of the two Pac-12 teams that are thought so highly of in Utah and Oregon, the fact that they're still ahead of them, I think they have a chance to still impress enough to get there. Obviously, they have to win out. They're going to have to be really impressive in their win at Auburn to finish the season in the Iron Bowl. And then their hope is that Auburn plays well enough this Saturday against Georgia to knock them off. And I think, actually, that Auburn has a great chance to beat Georgia because Georgia's struggling offensively.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll wait and see, but lots of football still to be played.
Yeah, Rick Neuheisel, CBS Sports college football analyst, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. You mentioned Auburn, Rick, and I was just telling my partner before this segment started, Auburn's got its fingerprints all over this year's playoff field. You mentioned their game against Georgia is pivotal. They still have Alabama on the schedule. They're tied to Oregon, yet they're not a contender themselves, but they can really wreak havoc on this whole thing the rest of the way.
Well, I think I can make a case that given some chaos, which I think we always kind of anticipate this time of year in college football, that if they were to beat Georgia decisively and then beat Alabama decisively in the season's finale, I could make a case where you could argue them as the fourth team. Again, it takes some carnage, but But I think that they're not dead yet.
And they still have to get through the SEC championship.
Playing with a freshman quarterback all season. And, by the way, this is going to be the first time in one of these big marquee games that Bo Nix actually gets to play at home. A&M was on the road. Florida was on the road. LSU was on the road. Oregon was in a neutral site. So this is going to give him a little bit of comfort, some home cooking, if you will. And if he plays really well, it's going to be a factor. But you're right. Auburn is all over this thing.
Yeah.
And the sad thing for Oregon is they're the ones that have lost to them.
Yeah.
Everybody else is going to point to it as a huge feather in their cap, where now you start doing the comparative analysis. If you're looking at a loss, albeit a very close one, and many would say that Oregon probably should have won the game, the bottom line is it ended up in the L column.
Let me ask you this, because I love what you said about Baylor, and I feel you about Minnesota. I love that vibe, that coach, and that whole thing that they've got going. Where do you draw the line between teams that deserve to be in the playoff and the teams that we should see because we know they're the best, or we know that they would represent the college football best Final Four?
That's a great question, and really that's at the crux of it all. You know, we decided to go away from the BCS computer formula because, one, we wanted more games, and, two, we didn't like the fact that computers were deciding this when common sense told us otherwise. And we now have got 13 people who all have great integrity. We're not questioning anybody's, you know, integrity, and the recusal process is in place to keep people from talking about teams that they're familiar with or have a relationship with. But at the end of the day, we don't get enough games to really determine who's the best, given how much the styles are contrasting.
Right.
The Pac-12, if you started at the beginning of the season and went through the playoff era, Clemson had won 40 conference games over the life of the playoff. Alabama was 40-plus wins over the life of the playoff. Ohio State was 40-plus wins over the life of the playoff. And Oklahoma was the same in the Big 12 over the life of the playoffs. So there was a dominant team in each of those conferences, and all of those teams had made their way to the college football playoff. In the Pac-12, the highest win percentage was the highest win total was 33.
Wow.
33 wins, and that was, I believe, Stanford. And so if you're 7 wins behind, just because you're playing in such a much more evenly matched conference, you don't get the benefit of the doubt when you're talking to the committee. And then it becomes a perception issue, such to the fact that Washington had to go play Auburn all the way across the country in Atlanta this year, a year ago. Oregon had to go to Dallas to play Auburn to get a game where everybody says, well, that's the game. And both teams fell short in close matchups.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's like you put a nail in the casket of the Pac-12 trying to get in. This is screaming that we need to go to 8. It's
yep.
screaming that every major conference needs to be represented. And the UCF story of the last couple of years is also screaming that we need to get a group of 5 team in. People always complain, oh, that's going to diminish the significance of the regular season. And I don't think anything is further from the truth. I mean, the bottom line is we're going to make more games exciting. Now, you may not be excited about seeing an ACC Coastal team as a potential in the playoff, but if they win, now we get to where you were just a second ago and called deserving. If they knock off, if Virginia ends up representing the Coastal Division of the ACC and knocks off Clemson in the ACC championship mm-hmm. game, Virginia deserves to be in, despite the fact that they weren't great all season long. And I think that makes it more interesting. I think more fan bases are pay more attention to the regular season and to the postseason. And I think the ratings would go through the roof as we watch these matchups down the stretch.
CBS Sports college football analyst Rick Neuheisel, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. Speaking of Clemson, and they play in that ACC, which has been down this year, admittedly. They've been challenged.
They're the only team from the ACC in the top 25.
Yeah, that's
wow.
true. And they had the one-point win at North Carolina, and they get into the top 4 this week. But they're a really hard team to gauge because of their level of dominance in a down conference. What do you make of Clemson at this point, Rick?
Well, and there's where the eye test fits in, right? We
yep.
go to between deserving, and the committee can go back and forth as they see fit. But we all know what we know about Clemson. That is a dominant program. Three guys were taken in the first round of the NFL draft last year from their defensive line, and yet they're still one of the top defenses in the country. They have been running roughshod over the rest of their competition in the ACC, and as anybody that's, you know, roots for the Clemson Tigers can tell you, that's not our fault that everybody else isn't playing very good. But ultimately, they're going to be in if they continue to win out because people believe that about them. But if you put that resume, you took that uniform off and put Minnesota's uniform off in the same schedule, the same near miss against North Carolina, and put it all, they would be sitting there probably where Minnesota's sitting, at
yeah.
eight.
Mm-hmm. Would the SEC, would they be cool with, say, one representative in a college football playoff? Has the playoff privilege kind of skewed their perspective? And how, with a playoff committee as it stands now, and you said there's checks and balances, there's the recusal process, can the SEC still affect the situation politically?
They affected this whole process of going to four, right? It was 2011 that where LSU and Alabama played each other and the country said, we have enough. You know, the SEC had done this and now we knew we were going to get an SEC national championship champion again. And the powers that be said, we can't do this anymore. But it was the SEC that said you did not have to be a conference champion.
Yep.
To get into the Final Four. And they're the only conference that has had two make the Final Four is Alabama and Georgia, as you recall, played for the national title just a couple years ago when we learned the name Tua Tagovailoa.
Uh-huh.
But that was all because the SEC said we're not gonna join in to this college football playoff idea unless the best four teams go, because they felt two of the best four, and sometimes even three of the best four, come from their particular conference. They wield a big stick. There's no question about it.
Last thing before we let you go, Rick, and we appreciate your time. What does Joe Burrow have to do to squander the Heisman Trophy at this point?
Oh, my goodness. Run afoul of the law?
Yeah.
I mean, that kid is playing so well. I was on the sideline for the game last week in Tuscaloosa.
Wow.
And saw him up close and personal. And what you don't see in a stat line, I mean, everybody can read that he was 31-39 for 393 and three touchdowns. They can see that he ran for 64 yards, which in NFL statistics would have been 90 yards, but for the sacks.
Yeah.
This kid is engineering the offense brilliantly. He's cool as a cucumber. The guy's got everything. But what you don't see in the stat line is how many times he makes people miss and how strong he is in terms of extending plays. There were free runners at him, and I'm telling you, good-looking free runners at him at Alabama. And he found ways to make a miss, keep a play alive, keep a drive alive, and the guy is remarkable.
You got
I've said he reminds me of Tom Brady. I'm standing by it. I think he's going to have a remarkable NFL career, and he's very, very fun to watch. The trophy's his unless something just bizarre happens, meaning that a Justin Fields or a Jalen Hurts just goes absolutely crazy, and there's some tip ball interceptions that happen to poor Joe Burrow. But
you gotta,
I don't see it happening.
You got to love Ed Orgeron, don't you? The guy wasn't good enough for USC, Rick?
Absolutely. I mean, if Jambalaya could talk, that's what it would sound like.
That is so good. That's lyrical, my man. That is genius.
That is absolutely who this guy is. Now, listen, I went toe-to-toe with this guy. He was the best recruiter at USC when I was at UCLA. And I literally would have to stay in a recruit's home till midnight because I knew Ed was outside waiting to get into the recruit's house. And I knew once midnight struck, he couldn't come in because he'd already wasted his day because he was at the school. So I would walk outside and I would wave at him and say, you can't get in. This guy was such a grinder in recruiting. And I admired him from that standpoint. And listen, he went 3-21 as the head coach at Ole Miss in conference play. And he said, I wasn't ready. I was micromanaging. I was trying to do everything. And I wasn't ready to do everything, nor am I capable of doing everything. So he gets this next opportunity here at LSU. He goes and finds a guy by the name of Matt Canada to be his coordinator. And he realizes in 1 year it's not a fit, personality-wise. Doesn't work. I mean, Matt Canada has fine football plays, but the personality didn't work. He fires him. He goes and gets his buddy, Steve Ensminger, to be there, who now he knows he's got a guy he can trust. Mm-hmm. And then Ensminger tells him, after meeting this kid, Joe Brady, from the Saints, where they were trying to, you know, work towards the New Orleans Saints offense, wanting to know about RPOs, that they needed to spread things out. And this Joe Brady gets up there and is so organized and so articulate and so spot on in terms of his presentation of the RPO game from the New Orleans Saints standpoint and from what he learned at Penn State, they hire him. And this is an unbelievable, unbelievable casserole of football that's happening there.
That's
great recruiting.
That's great.
Great passion. And now great X's and O's, and it's all coming to fruition.
That's great insight.
Rick, thanks.
That's great stuff.
Thanks so much for the time and the insight. I always appreciate you coming on the show.